Sebastian.
So the following presentation will be about the evaluation of the Fisher information matrix for nonlinear mixed effect models without linearization. So my name is Sebastian Ueckert, and together with my colleague Marika Rivière, we work as postdoctoral researchers in the group of France Montreuil at the EM Research Center in Paris. And we worked together on this project, and we came up with slightly different approaches. But since a lot of the methodology is still shared between our two approaches, we decided to do a joint presentation. So we'll hear some parts from me, and then some parts from Marika. But before I want to start with the actual presentation, I want to thank the organizing committee for giving us the opportunity to talk here. And I would like to acknowledge the Didi Moore initiative that France mentioned, who is paying my postdoc, and the IDEAL initiative, who is paying the postdoc of my career. All right, so this is the outline for our talk. I'm gonna introduce the problem. Then I will present the notation and a little bit about the common things between our two approaches. Then I will talk about how to approximate the information matrix using adaptive Gaussian curvature. And then Marie Carrel will take over, and she will present how to do this with Markov chain Monte Carlo methods. She will also present you the results of an evaluation study that we did. And finally, I will present, I will summarize our presentation. So let's start with some introduction. So as you saw in the presentation by France, and if you are a regular member of the port meetings, then you know that approximation methods of official information matrix is really at the heart of this conference. So if you hear that we're going to present a novel approximation for the official information matrix for nonlinear mixed effect models, you might ask yourself again, and why. So let me take a little bit of time to try to explain to you why we think these new methods are needed. And to do that, I want to go back a little bit into history, how the nonlinear mixed effect models were invented, or where they were applied first, and how they developed since then. So if you talk about nonlinear mixed effect models, we have to talk about one scientific field of pharmacokinetics. And France did already a nice introduction. So pharmacokinetics is the scientific field that studies the time course of drug absorption, distribution, metabolism, and excretion, and it uses mathematical models for that. And what is generally done in those studies is that you have a group of patients, here in this case six patients, and each of those patients, they get a drug, and then in predefined intervals, you take blood samples, measure the concentration, and then use a mathematical model to describe the concentration time curve and characterize those processes. This field, pharmacokinetics, had an important growth period in the 1960s. So it was really the time where a lot of important concepts were defined, for example, clearance, and where a lot of journals were also being created. But despite this growth in that field, the clinical use was very much limited. And you can actually see why if you look at those graphs here. If you imagine that you have patients that are sick and are in the clinic, and you are required to take that many blood samples in order to fit your model and then to draw any conclusion and that may be the dosing, then you can imagine that this is not very not very pleasant, right? Not very practical. So a new approach was proposed by Scheiner and colleagues in 1972. And what they proposed was to use those pharmacokinetic models, so they were nonlinear, and to decompose the parameters into a fixed and into a random component. And these resulting nonlinear mixed effect models, they had many advantages. Among them are that we can take sparse samples, so we can only sample a few times and anyway get the individual values for the subjects. And we can then use it for individualized dosing, and many other advantages too. The problem with those models was that the estimation is quite challenging, as you already heard in the previous presentations. So there's no analytic solution for the likelihood, and we need to approximate it. Luckily, in the same paper, Scheiner and colleagues also proposed a parameter estimation method, a so-called FO approximation. And the idea behind this method was to linearize the model with respect to the random effects, to evaluate it with random effects set to zero. So basically to essentially treat the nonlinear mixed effect models as a linear mixed effect model. And the good thing with this algorithm was that it was very fast, especially at that time. It was, of course, required. And also, I think what is very important, from 1980, it was available in a, let's say, a relatively easy to use software, which is NonMem. So this really helped to adapt this approach, at least in the field of pharmacokinetics, quite a lot. So how did it look on the design stage? Well, in the design stage, it was a little bit different, because here the design of experiments was mostly based on heuristics. And those heuristics very rarely took advantage of the structure of the nonlinear mixed effect models. So they didn't do necessarily the sparse sampling. And this could change after France introduced a approximation of the Fisher information matrix, which was also based on an FO approximation. So same idea, we first order approximate the nonlinear mixed effect models and then treat it as a linear mixed effect model. So when we look then at the, on the estimation side, it quickly turned out that this FO approximation was not the best method. It turned out to be biased. And consequently, the asymptotic theory did not really apply. And it happened already for rather simple models. So what we could see then is a rather large development of new estimation algorithms. And here I listed a few, it's certainly not all of them, but I think they are maybe the most important ones. Starting with the different linearization method, where we don't linearize around the mean of the population, but around the mode of the individual parameters introduced by Linzmann and Bates, also sometimes referred to as the first order conditional approximation. Then a number of approximation methods that directly approximate the integral of the likelihood expression, starting with the Laplacian approximation introduced by Turney and Cadain in 86, important sample introduced by Gwick in 1989, Gaussian curvature by Davidian and Galland, as well as the extension, adaptive Gaussian curvature by Pignor and Bates in 59. And then we have here maybe the, let's say, the most advanced and the newest method, which uses Markov chain Monte Carlo sampling to approximate, to sample directly from the individual parameter vectors, which is called stochastic approximation expectation maximization, and which was introduced by Kuhn and Lavielle in 2004. And with all those methods, you can imagine that there were, of course, also several papers being written comparing those different methods, how they performed in practice. And what we could see in general is that this adaptive Gaussian quadrature and the SEM approximation, they in general performed best or very well for the kind of models that were used. So how was the evolution? So we saw there's a lot of evolution in terms of estimation algorithms. How was that on the design side? Well, on the design side, it was a little bit different, because this FO approximation that we heard so much already about turned out to be rather accurate for a large class of models. So as Sergei actually nicely presented, there were some extension to the approximation of the population film. For example, the first order conditional approximation by Ritu and Montre, the non-block diagonal FO approximation introduced by Fratscher in 2004, or the first order conditional approximation around the mode of the joint likelihood introduced by Neuberg in 2012. And these extensions of the approximation, they had only, they improved only in some cases. So they were not a clear improvement upon the first order approximation, and some turned out to be actually even less accurate. So this is, I think, one reason why the FO approximation is still the most used method in population optimal design. And of course, it's also the one that is most used in those two software, PFIM and Poppet. However, since there were these very powerful estimation algorithms on the estimation side, there was also an evolution of models. So nowadays, the models in the field of pharmacokinetics, or pharmacometrics, as it's called nowadays, they are much more complex. We have more complex random effect structures. We might have actually multiple levels of random effects. We might have correlations between all those random effects, so full omega matrices. These models, they might handle multiple outcomes at once, like a parent and a metabolite, or PK/PD in one model. And then consequently have also many parameters. And maybe most importantly, there are more and more discrete models. So if you have discrete clinical endpoints, they're also described as discrete nonlinear mixed effect models. And for those cases, the effort approximation is not at all appropriate, like for the discrete outcomes, or much less appropriate. And based on that, our objective was to use those estimation algorithms, or the integration algorithms that had been shown to be very efficient on the estimation side, and apply them to the calculation of the information matrix for nonlinear mixed effect models, both for continuous and discrete outcomes. So let's look at how we did that. First, I want to start with some notation. So as I said, we talk about nonlinear mixed effect models, and we have two cases, continuous and discrete data. In the continuous case, we describe the response vector for individual I, where I is in the range of 1 to n, which depends on a nonlinear function f and a vector of residual errors. And those residual errors, they follow a normal distribution, mean zero, and variance matrix sigma, which is generally taken to be diagonal. And the nonlinear function f itself then depends on a vector of elementary design parameters, which can be the doses, the times, basically anything that you can change in a design, as well as a vector of individual parameters. And those individual parameters, again, they depend on a vector of fixed effects and the vector of random effects. And those random effects, they again assume to be normally distributed, mean zero, variance, omega. For the discrete data, we formulate the model slightly different. We model the probability, the conditional probability of the response given the random effect. Generally, we assume that the individual responses are, or the responses within one subject, they are independent, so we can write them as the product. And then those probabilities are given through this function h. And that that probability function h then depends again on the design variables, xi, as well as those individual parameters. Yeah. In this setting, then, the population information matrix, so the information matrix for all subjects in your trial, on your experiment, is then dependent on all the parameters, which is the sum of the fixed effects, the inter-individual random effects, as well as the residual error parameters, as well as the population design, which is just the sum of the individual designs for the subjects. And we can write this population information matrix as the sum of individual information matrices. And the individual information matrix then is defined, as you all know, as the expectation over the gradient product of the derivative of the log likelihood with respect to the parameters. And since we are in nonlinear mixed effect models, this likelihood expression itself, that is rather complex. That's why we have to do this complicated approximations. It's the integral over the joint density. The joint density depends on, or is composed of the probability of the data given the individual parameters times the density for the individual parameters. So that's the setting where we are operating. And so now let's talk how we can actually calculate this information matrix without using any linearization. So the first thing we can do is we can write this this expectation as an integral. Simply, I can realize that here the density for the data is simply the likelihood. And then realize that what then remains to be calculated is this this gradient product here. And what we the way we solve the outer integral is through Monte Carlo simulations. And this is the same for both our approaches. So both the approach that I will present, as well as the approach that Marie-Carl will present, will use Monte Carlo integration to solve this outer integral here, and then diverge in the way the inner term is calculated. So let's talk first about the approach that I worked on using adaptive Gaussian quadrature. OK, just to remind you, we want to calculate this quantity, Ay, which is the gradient product which is the gradient product of the log likelihoods. Then we can first use some derivative rules for logarithms to arrive at that expression. And we see we basically have to calculate two quantities, the likelihood itself and the derivative of the likelihood with respect to the parameters. So for the derivative, for the likelihood itself, we have here the definition of the likelihood, and in order to apply Gaussian quadrature, the first thing we do is we decorrelate the random effects. So we multiply, we introduce the variable eta, which is the random effect vector multiplied by the inverse of the Cholesky factor of the random effect matrix, of the variance matrix of the random effects. So now this eta variable has distribution, normal distribution 0 on 0, 1. It's not a normal distribution, sorry. So then we have we arrive at that integral. And for the derivative of the likelihood with respect to the parameters, we can first, under certain regularity conditions, exchange the derivative, differentiation and integration to update in that formula. And then we can, at least for the derivative with respect to the omegas, we can actually make some advances in an analytical way. But a big part still needs to be derived numerically. And what is important to see here is we still have to solve those integrals here, these three integrals in red. And we're going to do that using adaptive Gaussian quadrature. So for those of you who don't know too much about it, I made a small illustration. Gaussian quadrature, not adaptive Gaussian quadrature, so we'll go one step back, is it's a very efficient method to solve integrals of that form, where you have the where you have a product and the integrand, and where one of the factors is a basically has this bell-shaped curve. So then the idea is that we have the one of the integrands or one of the products being here. So we evaluate the product at a number of grid points, quadrature grid points. We then weigh those grid points by a predefined set of weights, and then we approximate this integral basically through through those evaluation points here, weighted by those grid points, so the weighted sum. And as what you can see here, what the problem is with standard Gaussian quadrature is that if I take a lot of quadrature points, you can see it quite nicely, I might waste a lot of points, because those points, those evaluations of the integrand, which can be quite complicated since there can be differential equations and so on, they don't contribute to the value of the integral, so they are wasted basically. So adaptive Gaussian quadrature goes one step further and corrects for that by taking the shape of the integrand into account. So what we do is we first center the integration grid at the mode of the integrand. So first we had this kind of behavior here, where those two points were more or less wasted. And then if we center, you can see that now those three points at least here, they contribute much more to the integral. But you can still see that those points here, they don't really contribute a lot, and also those have a rather low contribution. So we can do one step more. We can center the integration grid at the mode and scale it by the second derivative of the integrand. And then what you can see here is that now certainly those two points, they contribute much more to the integrand, to the value of the integrand. So how does the method look a bit more formal way? So first we take this random sample through classical Monte Carlo simulations. Let's call it Y. Then we determine the integration grid. So first we determine the mode of the logarithm of the joint likelihood through a general optimizer. We then calculate at the mode the second derivative of the joint likelihood through numerical differentiation in this case. We calculate the quadrature nodes, and you can see that the quadrature nodes are given as the mode, the centered at the mode, then plus the classical Gaussian quadrature grid scaled by the second derivative of the log likelihood. And also the weights, we also have to obviously update those weights based on the scaling and shifting. And then once we have determined the integration grid, we can then simply approximate those integrals as a weighted sum. And how this method performed, you will hear in a little bit later. But now Merkel will introduce the Markov chain-based method.
So now I will present you the approach based on MCMC. So first a reminder, we told that the Fisher information matrix can be written as the integral on y about these terms multiplied by the likelihood. So as Sebastian, I will estimate this integral using a Monte Carlo approximation. And now I will present you how I estimate this AY term. So after some calculation, we can arrive to this formula. And what we notice in this formula is that this term here is exactly the conditional density of B given Y. So it's the two similar integrals. And so we will estimate this integral on B using Markov chain Monte Carlo. So we just have to sample in this distribution and replace it to estimate these integrals. So the algorithm is simple. We are drawing a R sample from Y in its marginal distribution for the empty part. Then for each value of Y we have sampled, we will use MCMC. And we are drawing two series of M samples of B given Y. And then we could estimate the two integrals on B by the mean of the partial derivative of the conditional likelihood taken in those samples. Then to finish on the integral on Y, we just have to make the product of the previous partial derivative for each Y and do the mean according to Y to have a global estimation of the Fisher information matrix. So now I said, okay, we sample using MCMC in the density of B given Y, and we replace in the partial derivative of the conditional log likelihood. But how to calculate this partial derivative? So first, you can try to do it by hand. So we did it for continuous data, and we arrived to this formula, which is quite big, but you can simply compute it in R or other language. Or you can do it numerically for all types of distribution. For MCMC, we use STAN software, which was developed by the STAN development team in Columbia University by Gell-Mann, Carpenter, among others. It's really a recent software that is growing and growing up and very efficient. So STAN is a Markov chain Monte Carlo sampler. So similarly to JAK, just another gap sampler or bugs, it enables to sample in posterior distributions based on the construction of a Markov chain that has the desired distribution as a stationary distribution. But contrary to those software, STAN uses Hamiltonian Monte Carlo. JAKS, for example, use random walk Monte Carlo methods such as Metropolis Hastings or Gibbs sampling, which are widely used. But here, Hamiltonian Monte Carlo are more complex but also more efficient. They have proven faster convergence, and they are able to overcome some issue from Gibbs sampling. So it's really a fast algorithm, very efficient. And a very nice thing also is that STAN calculates the gradient of the log probability function. So it's exactly the partial derivative of the conditional log likelihood that I presented the slide before here. And that is really nice because the usual packages in R, for example, that we are using for derivation can be very long in this method. And with STAN, it's really fast. So now we have presented you two different approaches, adaptive Gaussian quadrature and MCMC, to evaluate the Fisher information matrix. And we will present you a simulation study to evaluate those design, those approach. So we compare three approaches with clinical trial simulation. So we compare first-order linearization. And for that, we used PEFIM software 4.0 with adaptive Gaussian quadrature that Sebastian presented. It was implemented in R. And the MCMC approach was also implemented in R using STEN. And we compared it with clinical trial simulation. For that, we have simulated 1,000 data sets. And then for each data set, we have estimated the parameters using Monolix 4.3. And we have compared these approaches in terms of relative standard error. So it's the root of the square root of the diagonal terms of the inverse of the Fisher information matrix. And we compared it with relative root mean square error. And then we also consider calculation times. So first, we took a standard example, the warfarin example that France presented you. So it's a one-compartment model with first-order absorption and elimination. We have here three parameters, and I have plotted some data where we can see the concentration in function of time for different patients. For this model, we have fixed effect with those values for key A, V, and the clearance. We have chosen exponential random effect with those variances, a proportional residual error. And for the design, we have 8 times and 32 patients. And this example, as in the presentation of France before, was included in the comparison paper of Naper. So for this very standard example, as expected, FO approximation works really well compared to clinical trial simulation. And the two approaches we proposed also perform very well on fixed effects and on the variance of random effects. So for this simple example, we can check that everything is okay and all methods perform well. Then we have also studied the more complex sigmoid Emax model. So this time we have 4 parameters. Again, I plotted the response in function of the dose for some patient. And for this model, we have 4 fixed effects. And here is the omega matrix for is the variance covariance matrix with the variances of the random effects. And we also added some covariance terms. And we have an heterocelastic error with 2 parts, an intercept and a slope. And for the design, we have 4 doses and 100 patients. For this example, we can observe that for the fixed effect, all methods perform well compared to clinical trial simulation with relative standard errors that are really close. And for the random for the variance on the random effect, we can see that for some parameters, values are exploding, and that for first-order linearization. So in this example, the first-order linearization fails to estimate the relative standard error of those parameters. And we truncated here the value and put the real value here, so it can be really huge for some parameters. So that was a 2 continuous example, and then our aim was also to apply those two approach to discrete data, where we cannot apply first-order linearization. So we choose a repeated time-to-event example with an exponential distribution and constant hazard given here. We have a fixed effect mu1 equal to 1. We have chosen again exponential random effect with variances equal to 0.1. We have 10 repeated measurements per patient and 50 patients. And we presented some data for different subjects here with repeated event. So in this simple discrete data example, we can observe that the two approach, MCMC and AGQ, performed well. Of course, we didn't present a linearization as it cannot be applied for discrete data. So we can check that our two approach perform well for discrete data. And then we ended the simulation study with a more complex discrete example where we presented the probability of response at time t with this logistic model. So we have three parameters for the fixed effect with the treatment effect given by mu 3. The variance for the random effects are given here. We have two groups. And we have, for the design, we have 13 points equally spaced between 0 and 1. And we have 25 patients per group. Again, here I presented some data for different subjects. And again, for this example, we can observe that both approach, MCMC and AGQ, perform really well to estimate relative standard error. Then we decided to compare time calculation as it is also an important question. So for each of the four examples I have presented, I put the time. So of course for clinical trial simulation it's really long. I didn't calculate it exactly, but it's more than 5 hours. You have to wait hours and hours. For first order linearization, it's really fast, only a few seconds, but it cannot be applied for discrete data. And for MCMC and AGQ, we compared it for each of these examples in terms of number of random effects. So with the time to event example, we have one random effect, and we represented the time in minutes for each method. Then for the second discrete example, the longitudinal binary, we have two random effects and we can see the time increasing. Then for the warfarin PK example, we have three random effects. And for the sigmoid Emax model, we have four random effects. And we can see that AGQ, the time for AGQ is increasing exponentially with the number of random parameters, whereas the time for MCMC is increasing linearly.
To summarize, I hope what you what we could present to you is that there is a need for new approximation methods to the Fisher transformation matrix, simply due to the evolution in models. And we presented you two approaches, both based on Monte Carlo simulations that that are in a way complementing. They have a number of advantages. They both work for adapted for discrete and continuous models. They both are independent of model linearization, so they are asymptotically exact if we take enough samples. They were, for all the examples that we looked at, were in very high agreement with the results from the clinical trial simulations. But there, of course, there are also some drawbacks with those methods, and one is the runtime that you saw. So these methods, they are several orders of magnitude slower than the effort approximation. And that can, of course, be a drawback. And they are subject to Monte Carlo noise. So your approximation of the FIM might vary a little bit just depending on which samples you took. So that might make optimization a little bit more challenging. So what are the next steps that we want to take? We want to publish those approaches as R packages on CRAN, and I think Marie-Carole, she's already very advanced in that step, so it's only won't take that much long, that much longer. We also want to look at design optimization. So first of all, as I explained, how to handle the Monte Carlo noise when optimizing a design. So here what one could do is stochastic approximation, or maybe simulated annealing, even if special simulated annealing, of course, will increase the runtime even more. Another idea that we had was adaptive approximation, so that you use a simpler approximation method, or maybe a method with fewer quadrature grid points or fewer MCMC samples during the beginning of the approximation, and then once you close to the suspected maxima, you improve your approximation. That's also something we want to look at. And then finally, what is imaginable is to look at alternative sampling methods. So right now we used naive Monte Carlo sampling, but of course what one could do is use Lattin hypercube sampling or quasi-random sampling in order to decrease the variance in the Monte Carlo estimates. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention and ask if there are any questions.
Yes? The sigmoidal Emacs, in the case when you don't have random effects, you quite frequently have the problem, so if you don't have individual effects, so you quite frequently have the problem of fitting the model to the data, because the maximum likelihood estimate might not exist. I just wonder how this is now in the nonlinear mixed effects models case, and whether this might, in some sense, decrease the estimated variability of the individual effects. Whether you had a, did you have a look at the individual fits?
No. And I mean, it's true that for the Gaussian quadrature, that's probably an issue because you have to find the mode of the joint likelihood. But I think for your approach, it's not really an issue, right? Because you're never actually having to fit the data to the, or the model to the data, or to the samples, let's say. It's not data, but the samples.
Yeah.
You're directly sampling from the...
Yeah, I'm sampling into the distribution.
So I think what you say, it could be an issue for Gaussian quadrature. We didn't see it in this example, but maybe it might occur. But I think for MCMC, it's less of a problem.
It was just interesting to see this big difference in the in this mean squared error for the variance estimates.
Ah, okay. And your comment is also in regarding that maybe the clinical trial simulations, they are...
Maybe, I don't know, that this was one idea which might be related.
Yeah. But even though the approximation method that was used to estimate was also MCMC-based, so it's not based on any of the estimates.
I was just wondering, is the exponential growth of the runtime for the quadrature method, the number of random effects, is that because you're evaluating the function on a grid that's the same dimension as the number of random effects?
Exactly.
So have you looked at optimizing the number of support points to actually evaluating that? I mean, some of these methods you can just use 3 or 5 points kind of dimension.
No, you're right. No, I mean, did not look at that. The idea about quasi-random sampling is a little bit in, goes a little bit in that direction, where you then don't have to let the grid grow in the same number of dimensions or the same number of grid points per dimension, and then also I think sparse grid methods something that could be applied, but we did not yet look at that. That's a good idea.
I'm just thinking about times. So in order to get at least reasonable approximations of uncertainty in a simulation study, in clinical trial simulation, maybe you need 30 simulations if you're really just trying to get order of magnitude things. So how many simulations were you doing here that it took 5 hours to do a study?
1,000.
1,000. So could you really reduce that time down to close to what you guys are getting if you had 30 samples? How much would one run take, for example?
Like 3% of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it still would be a little faster. And it's a bit unfair comparison because the clinical trial simulations, they were run in Monolix, which is a compiled language. And our approaches, they are at least the adaptive Gaussian curvature is implemented in R, which is a very high-level language. So I think we could significantly improve the runtime just by switching to a different language. So I think there will still be a advantage in runtime.
Yeah, because I guess if you're using monolix, then you're using SAM, which is orders of magnitude slower than the Laplace.
Yes.
So if you were using non-MEM, doing 30 simulations, I'm just trying to, because once our design calculations get on the order of magnitude or close to the time it takes to do a clinical trial simulation, I think it's, at least at this point, it's much easier for people just to do clinical trial simulation in general than to switch to a new software and change.
I
was going to say that for the discrete example, you could not use Laplace. You have to do something better than Laplace because it's shown that Laplace is not working well. So I'm not sure whether we will gain. And again, only 30 replicates for CTS? I'm not sure. But I agree with you. When they converge, better do CTS.
Yeah, and I put 5 hours, but it was much more. It's just we put that during the night, and so we didn't watch really, but I think we still have a big earn of time with our crutches.
And were these parallelized, or was it all on one machine, or was it?
It was on our computer, our small computer, but we had exactly the same, so by in the same time, so we could completely compare. So it's not on a very big calculator machine, but.
I think there was nothing parallel. So.
No, nothing yet.
But everything can be parallelized. There's CTS. Oh, yeah, so that's our two approaches.
Why do you put two dots over the I and sigmoid?
I also mean the same actually.
What?
Yeah, and sigmoid, you go to this. Oh,
why? This is a French way to write it. Oh, you put two dots in French. I don't know. In English, you don't put two dots?
No.
In American English, I know, but in UK English, two dots or one dot? Okay, sorry. So that's a French linear.
But maybe it was a German person
and
they put dots.
Oh,
two dots on high
shelf. In French. Sigmoid in French, we have two dots. Thank you.
How do you pronounce it in French?
Sigmoid.
Sigmoid.
Yes.
Long E.
Yeah, long E. Yeah.
Thank you.